Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartzdraver. On today's show, email privacy. The Email Privacy Act, which basically requires that law enforcement get a warrant before accessing Americans' online communications, relatively uncontroversial, it passed the House of Representatives unanimously, 419-0, which is kind of crazy in an era when Congress can't seem to agree that the sky is blue. But the bill has hit a snag in the Senate, and one of the real dividing lines is what happens when law enforcement needs access to information in an emergency. Should there be an exception, or should they still have to get a warrant? Joining me to discuss this is Jim Trainum, a former police officer and co-chair of the Constitution Project's Policing Reform Committee. He argued in a recent op-ed in The Hill that, and the title of the op-ed is, Congress shouldn't tamper with law enforcement's emergency exception rule. Jim, thank you for joining me.
You're quite welcome. Thank you for having me.
So just walk us through what exactly this amendment would do. The core of the bill closes some loopholes, basically requires law enforcement to get a warrant, basic Fourth Amendment protections for digital communications. What is this amendment that is causing such an uproar among privacy advocates?
It basically allows me as a law enforcement officer to circumvent the entire system of warrants and court orders and whatnot just by saying that I have an emergency and you have to give this to me right now.
And is there a definition of what an emergency entails, or is it entirely up to a police officer to decide what the emergency is?
It's pretty much up to the police officer. Now, what they're supposed to do is, after they declare that this is an emergency, they're supposed to get a certification justifying why it is an emergency, but that's only after the fact. There's really no system that I've seen in place for monitoring or reviewing what those certifications. So basically, as an officer, I can just call up a service provider, provide them with no justification whatsoever. Just tell them that this is an emergency and give it to me right now.
And then if the service provider refuses, they would be failing to comply with this law if the amendment were to be signed into law by President Obama?
That's correct.
But what if the law enforcement official improperly requested an emergency exception, or in that review that you said is supposed to happen after the fact, it wasn't an emergency? Is there any repercussion?
I saw none in the bill whatsoever. And it's really funny. I like the way that law enforcement works. I've always found it amusing. We love rules. And we love people to be punished when they break the rules, except when the rules apply to us. I mean, I've just seen it time and time again where there have been things mandated, but there's no sanctions when people violate that mandate.
So basically, the only safeguard here is really that individual police departments would take this emergency exception seriously and punish those officers who abuse it. But then again, the idea that we always hear is that police stick together and they're not really trying to screw each other over or jeopardize each other in any way. So I'm not sure that there's any real incentive for oversight here. Are there any safeguards in this bill to prevent frivolous emergency requests?
Really, there are not. But like I said, the only supposed safeguard is that you have to certify upon penalty of perjury or whatever. But there's nothing in place for who's reviewing this process. I could be making numerous fraudulent requests for various reasons. And unless the information is drawn into the courtroom or whatnot, there's nobody coming behind me. There's no system for somebody coming behind me like a judge to review my emergency request and determine that they are real emergencies.
So I want to contrast this with what the current regime is. So if this amendment were to pass, you would have this emergency exception. What happens now in an emergency when a law enforcement official has determined I need access to this information and I can't go through the process of getting a warrant because it's an emergency? What happens?
Most times, believe it or not, the people who you're asking for the information, they comply.
And that's the service provider, whether that's a wireless phone carrier, an email provider, or a social network, or a telecom.
Yes. I mean, I have had such requests in the past on my cases. They're very rare. But when I made the request, then they asked me a question or two, but they always complied. I never had any problems.
So where did you serve?
I was with the Metropolitan Police Department in D.C. Most of my career was in the homicide unit.
So you're a local guy.
Yes.
And you served for 27 years.
Yes.
And these are you served in a role where there might actually be emergencies, where it's plausible because you're trying to investigate murder and it's a time-sensitive case and you might need information. In your 27 years, were you ever refused by a service provider, or did the current regime ever hamper your investigatory work?
I never had any problems along that line, but like I said, my requests were extremely rare. What's the nice thing about having a process in place where you need a checks and balances is that it kind of makes you slow down. It makes you take your time. Let's go back and look at search warrants, per se. I mean, typically, if you want to go into somebody's house and search it for evidence, you need to be able to justify to a judge why you think evidence is in that house. I very, very seldom have ever had evidence recovered during a search warrant suppressed. What happens is when we do the emergency exception or we bypass the system, such as asking a person for a consent to search or saying that if we don't go in right now, the evidence is going to be destroyed. Typically, it's in those cases that you have problems and the evidence ends up getting suppressed because it really wasn't all that much of an emergency. So by having systems like warrants and things like that where somebody has oversight, it makes you build a stronger case. It prevents you from taking shortcuts. It's when law enforcement starts to take shortcuts, that's when we get in trouble. That's when we violate people's rights. And that's when we actually lose cases.
Yeah, that's the obvious point here is that you could imagine a scenario where a frivolous emergency request was made, and that's a great gift to the defense attorney who can now get his client off because of a process failure. So your point is that actually having safeguards and having barriers in place could actually strengthen a case in the long term.
It does. But you know, the thing is, when you look at rules, rules are put in place for a reason. Rules are there because somebody abused the system beforehand. That's why we have search warrants, because people were a great example is when they first started the civil forfeiture laws. And this was a brand new thing where we could go out and we could seize, you know, suspected proceeds of crime, drug money, things along that line. And I remember attending a conference where there was a DOJ representative there. And he was telling us, you know, this is a good law for you only if you don't abuse it. If you abuse it, it's going to come back and bite you. And it has. And that's why we need those controls in place. By opening this up for a free-for-all, it's just going to open it up to a much greater potential for abuse, not only by law enforcement, but by people posing as law enforcement officers. It would be much easier for them to be able to get information. And we have numerous examples of people who pose as law enforcement officers who obtain information that they should not.
Yeah, and you've said that this is rare, and a listener might say, okay, you've got one cop on the show who says 27 years, he never had a problem, and it was rare, but there are data to back this up. And in 2014, Google received only 342 emergency requests. This is a company with over 1 billion people using it. To only have 342 emergency requests compared to 20,000 subpoenas and search warrants, which are arguably a better process. You have to have some kind of justification other than an emergency. It is really rare. Do you think that if this amendment were to pass, that we would see that rarity go away? Because right now the gatekeeper is the service provider, and the service provider has to agree with you that it's an emergency. And you say most of the time they agree. If they are now compelled to give it away and they have no agency anymore, they have no ability to decide if it's a legitimate request, do you think these requests will become more common?
But they also have no ability to go behind it and see whether or not somebody's abusing it. That's not written in there as well. No, there's no monitor. Like I said, I could make an emergency request. I do my little certification, but the service provider doesn't have the ability to come behind me and make sure that that request was justified. At least not as I see it in this bill. Once you start making these workarounds easier, I've never seen them not abused. And it's not going to be by everybody, but it's going to be a small percentage who feel like, you know, these shortcuts do nothing but hinder their work. They have noble cause, corruption, you know, whatever it takes to get the bad guy. And it's just that, you know, when you have something like this there where there's no real control over it, the less control, the more abuse.
Right. And so the real issues that we've touched on here are, one, some in law enforcement and some in the Senate think that law enforcement investigations are going to be impeded by email privacy reform, or they're just trying to attach this unrelated thing, even though the bill passed unanimously. And then there's the issue of privacy and consumers' privacy being violated by frivolous requests. But then there's a cybersecurity angle here, and you touched on it a bit before I asked about the Google thing, and you said that people will pose as law enforcement in order to get information, which could be used for identity theft. It's the cheapest way of hacking you could possibly imagine. You don't even have to know anything about computers. All you have to do is make a request. And there's an important point you make in the article too about the method of transfer. So is there a problem when law enforcement asks a service provider like Verizon, for example, for information in an emergency, and they say they need it right now, and there's no time for proper security practices? Is there a danger that in the process of transferring the data to law enforcement, that a third party, maybe a malicious actor, a cyber criminal, a foreign government, could take advantage of that transfer?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if I'm asking for somebody to send me something by email, I mean, email is extremely easy to hack. Even my departmental email when I worked for the DC government, that was hacked on a couple of occasions. And so for them to send us stuff without the proper security requirements, or the proper, or by using methods that are less secure than is ideal, we open up that for all sorts of abuse.
And in your 27 years, did you see this type of thing occur, or did you see cyber criminals exploiting the process for their benefit, or because of the lack of this amendment in your time on the force, did this not happen? I mean, I guess I'm trying to get a sense of how often this sort of thing occurred in your during your tenure.
Well, for one individual detective, not all that often. However, like I said, the fewer controls you have, the much more likely it is to happen. But just as an example, outside the cyber, the cybercrime area, we had a problem with jailhouse inmates who were calling various law enforcement agencies or various government prosecutors' offices, posing as police officers, getting information about other people's cases so that they could go and say to another detective, hey, this guy confessed to me, and here's all the details about his case that he said. And so, you know, criminals are extremely creative at getting information that they should not have. And a rule like this that doesn't have the checks and balances doesn't allow the service provider to say, well, whoa, I think something's kind of funny here. Let's slow down and check this out. It just opens the floodgates.
Yeah, and there's a clear trade-off here, because this bill on the whole is widely supported by privacy advocates because it requires law enforcement to get a warrant to access online communications. And the real, you know, listeners who might not have heard our two previous episodes about ECPA reform, there's a massive loophole in current law because the law was written in 1986, where if a stored email that has been opened is older than 180 days old, it can be surveilled without a warrant, which sounds ridiculous. And that's not the controversial issue. Law enforcement has agreed that having this 180-day rule in the era of cloud storage is not a problem. But the issue is that this kind of seems like an unrelated problem in some ways. It's that this mandatory exception could maybe be dealt with separately, but senators who want to potentially kill email privacy reform are trying to attach an unpalatable amendment because they know that privacy advocates will reject it. As a privacy advocate yourself, as someone who's trying to reform the way that policing works, that's the title of your project at the Constitution Project, what would you do if presented this shitty option, expanding the emergency exception versus fixing the 180-day loophole?
I would definitely put in a lot more checks and balances. If they want to, you know, push this forward. There needs to be some kind of review process so that there's a checks and balance to make sure that these emergency requests are true emergency requests, and that is not in there. And so it really surprises me that this is in there to begin with, in the form that it's in. And I would personally reject the bill if this went through as it is right now.
Let's get into those potential fixes, because privacy advocates are really trying to make this work. And if there is room for a compromise, I think any pragmatic organization is willing to explore that. So would something like, let's say hypothetically, it turns out that an emergency request was frivolous and we find that out after the fact, could we put in something that says that information can't be used against a defendant because it was obtained improperly? Would that mitigate this problem?
It would. But however, like I said, a lot of times law enforcement gets information that never makes it into a courtroom. And it's just not relevant for the trial. I mean, we gather a lot of information and only some of it moves the case forward to trial. And so you could be having a lot of requests, a so-called emergency request for information, that never undergoes the scrutiny of a judge down the road.
Oh, and then there's the parallel construction problem, which actually your colleague Jake LaPerouque came on the show to talk about, where you could obtain the information using an emergency request, and then the internal review process in this hypothetical world where we've made this bill better finds that that was an improper request. But now that you know this information, you can go through the quote unquote proper channels, yes, to obtain the information another way, but the genesis of that was improper. So now that I've gotten this information, this ill-gotten information, I can go get a search warrant, get the information the correct way, and convict someone, even though I should have never known about that thing in the first place. And that, I guess, even if you were to amend this to have a better review process and to invalidate evidence that was obtained through an emergency exception, you're not dealing with the parallel construction problem. And that's another can of worms.
That's a whole nother can of worms.
It's not necessarily worth trying to add more to this bill at this point, right?
And let's say a hypothetical that I'm a rogue cop and I'm trying to get information because I'm stalking an ex-girlfriend. Right. And I could use this emergency exception, I could get this information. And unless there's some sort of internal review process and some sort of disciplinary thing going on, and there's nothing set up here to have that, I'll never be found out. And I could just keep abusing it for my own, you know, sake, as long as I wanted to.
Right. Well, certainly it seems like your recommendation here would be to not pass the bill if this amendment goes unchanged, but there is some room to make this work better, even though at its heart, you don't see a problem with the current regime, correct?
I do not see a problem with the current, the way things are done at this point.
Yeah, well, I guess the real question for privacy advocates as this bill moves forward, and we're going to be putting this podcast out, and there's a big question mark still about whether the Email Privacy Act will come up for a markup in the Senate. It was delayed last week or 2 weeks ago because of concerns that amendments like this would get proposed, and that while the bill passed unanimously in the House, that the Senate is a different animal. The Senate does not have the civil libertarian streak that the House does. And it looks like we might be headed for a second delay because of the same problem. So these are some ongoing negotiations, and privacy advocates are going to have to ask themselves, what's negotiable, or is none of this negotiable? Any final parting thoughts before we end the show?
I think we pretty much covered all my thoughts right there.
All right, no, this was great. I'm really glad that we worked through this issue, because mandatory emergency exceptions are a real fault line in privacy debates, and it's important to lay out the issues. My guest has been Jim Trainum, former police officer for 27 years at the DC Metropolitan Police Officer and co-chair of the Constitution Project's Policing Reform Committee. He argued in a recent op-ed in The Hill that the emergency exception amendment is both harmful and unnecessary. Jim, thank you so much for joining the show.
And thank you for having me.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Tech Freedom. Send us an email at media@techfreedom.org. We're always happy to get your feedback, guests you like, guests you want to see, topics you want discussed on the show. Find this podcast in the iTunes store or on your favorite podcast app. Please leave us a review, because we'll help others find the show. And thanks for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.